The Otting Monthly March podcast, Libby. In the weeks since Christmas, when sadly we lost the great Mike Ritchie at the age of 92, there has been a chance for friends and followers of the great single-hander to muse about what he taught us, specifically about cruising. He and his 26-foot jester did 13 Atlantic crossings, to Newport with the Austar and back, including an 80th birthday at sea, and many other cruises like the Azores and Western Ireland. Mike survived the boat's total loss in a storm in 88 to sail on for another 12 years in the replica commissioned by the Jester Trust. The thing about Mike, who became a great friend of our family over the years, was that as a wartime seafarer and founder director of the Royal Institute of Navigation, he really wasn't that interested in the technicalities of sailing. Fiddling with ropes and sail shapes was of marginal interest to him. What he loved was the science and art of navigation and making a voyage well, something which, as a former sculpture pupil of Eric Gill, he observed was no different to making a table or chair well. He liked to have a purpose, be it the Austar, getting home, or researching early navigational history, because, as he said, once you get to the point where it doesn't matter which way you go, you might as well be on Lilo. On his purposeful voyages, everything was done carefully and with a sort of monastic focus, but also with as much monastic simplicity as possible. So, in this age of affluent overcomplication, his way is worth contemplating, even if few of us are up to copying it. Consider the boat. Jester is a folk boat, strong and simple, with a junk rig controlled from a central hatch, no foresail. She goes to windward, though not to racing standard. She's not fast. Some of those crossings took 2 months. No engine, no plumbing, few electrics, certainly no fridge. His power source was one car battery. And when my husband Paul asked about recharging, Mike said, "Well, we usually charge it up when I get to the other side." Yet this was a profoundly civilized man, and his voyages sophisticated. He was no Luddite, though sometimes, when we mentioned some particularly refined and unnecessary new bit of gear, he would utter an amused, "Well, I'll be damned." He was a master of astro-navigation, but when the first GPS came in, he said ruefully that he'd looked at his Zeiss sextant and suddenly saw a piece of antique furniture. He read widely during his long solitudes at sea, St. Paul, the Mabinogion, Conrad. Sometimes he listened to music, though he considered audiobooks to be cheating. He liked his glass of red wine and was horrified one year to find that a sponsor's kindly donated wine was rosé, not rouge. He believed you should prepare food properly even when you're alone and not be reduced to gnawing in your bunk. He sailed with air-dried hams, tough sausages with names like Jésus de Lyon, bags of rice, lentils, and spaghetti eaten with tomatoes and onions. Simplicity need not be primitive. He had a sensible attitude to danger, Mike. He knew that single-handing's always a risk, but that his slow-moving little boat would hardly be a danger to anybody else. "Supposing my little boat leaves Plymouth and a tanker leaves Boston coming the other way, what are the chances of it hitting me?" he would tell us. But if Mike had been run down, he would have accepted it with grace, taking responsibility for himself, master of his fate and captain of his soul. I suppose what he showed us over many decades is that in an age of ever more technological complication, making a great voyage is more about you than about your kit. You don't need to break records or spend hours tapping out emails to your loved ones and your sponsor. You don't need to stare neurotically into a bank of instruments. All you really need to get from one continent to another is a sextant, a walker log, and a stout little ship. And, of course, character and competence. Mike wasn't a particularly physical chap. He wasn't super fit, not prone to go off running marathons like Rand Fines or needing an online sleep therapist like the Vendée Globe contestants. But he knew what he was doing, and he did it carefully and elegantly. Crossing oceans, he showed us, is as much a frame of mind as anything else. Here's to his memory.